It's just so ironic that these people that claim to be feminists can't say what it is that is either unique or even valuable about women. You know, the kind of ideology that's behind Bill C-16 as well as Bill C-16 itself means that we cannot define gender anymore. We can't define women, which then leads to all sorts of problems with having women's movement, women's protections or women's sports or having women's anything once you can't define what the word woman means.
On the feature today, a Vancouver area pastor with a new approach on the transgender debate. In the news, ARPA getting its message out at the Manning Conference. Some thoughts from the We Need a Law campaign on the conservative leadership race, and another look ahead to this year's God and Government Youth Conference in Ottawa.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA's staff spent the final few days of last week getting the organization's message out at the annual Manning Networking Conference in Ottawa. Executive Director Mark Penninga says it's an annual opportunity for networking and for reinforcing relationships.
The thing with relationships is that they take time to build. And by going year after year, we show them that we're here to stay, that an explicitly Christian perspective on these issues in the public square is something that they need to consider. And also it gives us a chance to build on the relationships, the real person-to-person context that we have. Even if the people we're speaking with are secular or from a different religion altogether, they get a chance to meet us and to think a little bit more about the issues we're talking about, from gender identity to multiculturalism, Aboriginal affairs, preborn human rights. So it's definitely worth our time. It's worth their time for us to be there each year.
Penninga says there's also a need to expand that relationship building beyond the small C conservative base that's represented at the Manning Conference, and ARPA is looking at new ways of doing that.
One thing that we're actively looking into this year that's different than the past is we're trying to get into the Progress Summit, which is the large networking conference for the organizations, the leaders on the left. So this is dubbed to be the largest annual gathering of progressivists organized by the Broadbent Institute. So we figure if ARPA's work has a place at the conservative side of the political spectrum, it has just as much of a place on the other side of the political spectrum. They need to hear it just as much. So right now we're working on getting a welcome there as well.
Speaking of the conservative side of the spectrum, the federal conservative leadership race is continuing. We Need a Law's Mike Schutten attended a leadership debate in BC earlier this month.
One of the interesting and unique aspects of it was that it was held in a business owned by a Canadian Reformed couple, a large greenhouse operation in the Fraser Valley. They had lots of extra room at this time of year, so they converted it really into a theater where we could listen to 12 of the 14 candidates. And because of the large number of candidates, the people who put on these debates are starting to think of kind of ingenious ways in which the audience can get to know them. And at this debate, what they did was they had essentially mini debates. So they had three candidates come forward. They'd throw a question at them. They each had a minute to answer it. And then they had a 3-minute open session that they could just all debate about it.
From We Need a Law's perspective, the issue of abortion is, of course, very important. Schutten says it didn't really come up very much in the debate, except for in one instance.
One candidate in particular, Pierre Lemieux, who his remarks resonated with the audience, and you could tell by the amount of clapping and cheering after he would speak. He was really the only candidate to bring up preborn human rights. And I think what was encouraging for us as a campaign is that he was saying the very same things that we continually are bringing and putting in front of the Canadian public and politicians. And that is that Canada is the only country with no legislation. That means that things like sex-selective abortion are legal in our country. But really, the other candidates who he was debating with, they didn't bite on it. I think they got a good sense of who he was speaking to, the audience, and that they were supportive of what he was saying, and they didn't want to really confront him with that if they had a different opinion.
Schutten says neither We Need a Law nor ARPA are taking any firm positions on which candidates to support. But at the same time, he says it is important for supporters to get involved in the process.
We're a nonpartisan organization. We're not going to endorse the Conservatives. We're not going to endorse candidates. We endorse the topic of advancing preborn human rights. And when candidates are speaking about those issues in ways that, if elected, they would work to chip away at the status quo, then we want people to be made aware of that so that if they're so inclined, they can go out, get a party membership, and support one of these candidates. And I think Canadians and the party need to see that Christians, that pro-lifers, that SOCONs are not just relevant, but that there are a lot of us in our country. And my concern is that there's a lot of reformed people who aren't aware that this is an opportunity to get involved.
Chutin says this leadership race really is unique because it marks the first time in decades that the abortion issue is being openly talked about in the context of a major national political discussion. The deadline to buy a membership in the Conservative Party so you can vote in the leadership race is March 28th. Preparations continuing for the first God and Government Youth Conference in Ottawa. ARPA's Grassroots Engagement Manager, Colin Postman, says there were a total of 44 applications from across the country for 28 positions. The successful applicants are being notified now in preparation for the event, which is coming up in May. Postman says there's all kinds of interesting things planned for the conference.
We're kind of trying it out just to see how this will work. One of the challenges with the God and Government conference that we've done in the past is always being able to get people who have other commitments. You know, they've got jobs they've got to take time off for in order to make it down to Ottawa. So for students taking time off of school with principal's permission and that and getting them excited about this issue, we decided that's what we would try to do this time around. We're going to have speakers and some workshops on a series of political issues. There's going to be tours of Parliament Hill, the Supreme Court. We've got meetings with members of Parliament and senators lined up. So basically, they'll be split up into smaller groups that will be going around kind of on their own with a leader and be meeting with members of Parliament and doing all these different things. And then on the last day, the Thursday, they'll be taking part in the annual March for Life and the Reform Prayer Service as well.
If you're interested in helping out with the logistics, there's something you can do even if you don't live anywhere near the nation's capital.
If there's anybody who's listening who has air miles or Aeroplan rewards points that they'd like to donate to the students who hope to come, especially from the western provinces, we'd be grateful to have them. Or any other donations anybody be willing to make this conference a success.
The event runs May 8th through 11th. Back with more after this.
Do you have a question about Canadian news or politics that you would like answered on air? We would love to hear from you. Go to arpacanada.ca/lighthousenews and click on Answering Machine to leave us a brief message. Please keep your message to 90 seconds or less. When leaving a message, please start with your name and where you're calling from. Visit arpacanada.ca/lighthousenews and tune in to hear answers to your questions and much more on Lighthouse News.
On the feature this week, a conversation with Pastor Paul Dirks. He's with the New West Community Church in New Westminster, BC. That's part of the Greater Vancouver area. Pastor Dirks and his congregation have started what they're calling the Woman Means Something campaign. Pastor Dirks, can you give us a brief summary of what this campaign is and what you're hoping it'll do?
Yeah, we were kind of late to the table in understanding Bill 16, and that had already passed the House of Commons. And it was about 4 months ago that this came across my plate. And we just kind of got, myself and a couple others, got excited about the need to oppose Bill C-16 from a women's rights and protections perspective. So the campaign, of course, is Woman Means Something. And the idea is that even though this bill is well-intentioned in regards to trans individuals wanting to protect them and their rights, that it inadvertently pits gender-based rights against sex-based rights, and that the people that are going to suffer the most in that are going to be women and children. Really, we're seeing the erasure of women's protections and even very identity under law taking place before our very eyes.
So you've received some flack for this position. There's been some press coverage in the New Westminster Record, for instance, also some of the pro-trans blog sites and stuff. They're arguing that you've got the approach wrong, that what's underlying this is the idea that you're somehow transphobic. What do you do with accusations like that?
You know, I'd never hear that. I always make sure that I say, listen, I love trans people and I love detrans people. The detrans individuals that are starting to become more and more prevalent in social media is going to show up eventually in the medical literature. These are people that, too, are in many cases opposed to the mass media trans narrative, especially when it comes to transitioning children. But even more broadly than that, you know, I love them. I love trans people. And it just seems to me like, you know, labeling somebody as transphobic is the easy way out instead of wrestling with the actual arguments and the logic that comes behind campaigns like ours.
The campaign poster I saw says, and I quote, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, in order to be a feminist, you have to believe that a woman means something. Why did you decide to choose this particular angle?
We essentially wanted to use Mr. Trudeau's very vocal feminism to try to raise awareness of really the problem of Bill C-16, which is the erasure of women's identity. Recently, I had a conversation with Senator Mitchell. I was very thankful for that opportunity. And I asked him about women's identity and the value of women. And he wanted no part of that conversation, which is, it's just so ironic that these people that claim to be feminists can't say what it is that is either unique or even valuable about women. You know, the kind of ideology that's behind Bill C-16, as well as Bill C-16 itself, means that we cannot define gender anymore. We can't define women, which then leads to all sorts of problems with having women's movement, women's protections, or women's sports, or having women's anything, once you can't define what the word woman means.
Now, we both know that the Bible is very distinctive in many respects as far as women are concerned. The idea of being created in the image of God and thus equal before Him kind of sets Christians apart from the secular morality that really has no sound foundation for respecting women or anybody. It also sets us apart from any of the world's other religions. Some of them, of course, relegate women to the status of property or chattels, certainly to a status that's subservient to men. Now, in saying that, are you concerned in any way about emphasizing the feminist aspect of this, particularly when feminism has become so closely tied to the abortion movement?
You know, I think that this is how politics works, that we look around with those who are allies, we try to work with them, and we're clear about where we stand on other issues. For instance, when I have either a radical feminist or even a lesbian radical feminist that comes in and is willing to work with us in our organization and campaign, willing to write articles or wherever it is, I'm very upfront about who I am as the organizer of the campaign. I mention that I don't support gay marriage. I mention that I'm a social conservative. And we know that there's opposition, you know, between these two groups over human rights and unborn rights. And this is something that means a lot to me. And yet, you know, I'm finding that right across the political spectrum, people are willing to work together on this issue, because if you really think about it, it means nothing less than the entire rollback of women's rights, you know, anything that's been accomplished over the last 50-100 years.
Part of the reality of Bill C-16 is that it's already passed the House and is now before the Senate. The opposition to the bill is starting to increase to the point where senators aren't even engaging directly on it anymore. They're just having their staff take messages. And some of the candidates in the conservative leadership race are starting to come out against C-16 now. They're starting to see problems with it, even though some of them voted in favor of it when it came before the House. So the fundamental question is there time to turn this issue around?
One of the reasons I am so hopeful is because of some of the new data that's coming out. This is a real problem for the mass media trans narrative. In the literature, rates of regret for transition are small, 3%, maybe even lower than 3%. And also the follow-up of transition, also very low. You know, 40-50% cannot be followed up afterwards. And I think that until recently, the supposition has been that those who could not be followed up were doing reasonably well. And now it's coming to light that hiding in this non-followed up group are tremendous amounts of people that are not satisfied with transition, that it hasn't helped their gender dysphoria. And I think we're going to start to see this reflected in the medical literature over the next couple of years as people grapple with huge amounts of people coming forward saying these things. So I think the tide's turning. I think we are either moments before or maybe at the peak of the turn of a tide. And I think that now is the time for people to make their voices heard on this issue.
Beyond C-16, any final thoughts on how Christians and how the church should approach the whole issue of transgenderism?
I think that we need to offer the hope that exists from the Bible. And I think that, you know, the Bible's prescriptions for sex and gender, whether it's rooted in Genesis 2 and Ephesians 5, I think these are the solutions for people. I believe the Bible's message for men and women and for those wrestling with the brokenness that exists in this world is there for anybody who wants to seek and find. And the church needs to be open to that and not scared of engaging. Keep showing the love of Christ. And sometimes it's not always easy. There's all sorts of people that tell me that I can't possibly love a trans person while opposing a bill that is for their rights. But we do this with courage and with truth and grace. And we need that mix as we do it courageously.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email. Lighthouse News at arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.